Because God hears the cries of his people, he will respond in righteous judgment. So on that day, where will your trust be? Tonight we are in Revelation chapter 8, as we read verse 1 down through verse 9, we are reading about the breaking of the seventh seal and the seven trumpets of judgment here in the book of Revelation. We're only going to get to two of those trumpets that are blown there in heaven by those angels. We'll get to two of those here tonight, and we'll examine them at some length. If you remember, in chapter 5, Jesus is seen there in heaven. Rather, God the Father is seen there in heaven, and Jesus goes to him. He takes the scroll. It's the scroll of the future. It has all the things of the future written inside of it, and that scroll is sealed with six seals. Jesus is the one who is found worthy in heaven and earth and under the earth, and he goes to the Father. He takes that seal, or he takes that scroll of the future, of the end of all things. He takes that scroll from God Almighty, from the Father, and he takes it. And then in chapter 6, he begins to open that scroll. He begins to unfold that scroll. And in order to do that, he breaks each one of these seals. And as Jesus breaks open each one of these seals, various judgments from God pour out on earth. And as you remember, at the beginning of chapter 6, those first five seals that are broken, there are violent things that take place. There's conquering and conquest. There's famine. There's pestilence. There's great war. There's a massive death toll that takes place here on the earth. And then that sixth seal that breaks open is these signs in the heavens, to which in chapter 7, the people of Israel see these signs in the heavens, and the 144,000, a perfect number of all the people of Israel, are sealed for God by God, for his possession and for his protection. And then there at the end of chapter 7, we see through John's eyes, as he's seeing this vision in heaven, we see there through his eyes this vision of the throne room of God, where there are peoples from every tribe and language and nation on the earth, and they are all singing the same song, worshiping God. God has reconciled man unto himself, and there's a great worship service that takes place. Chapter 8 is the breaking of that seventh seal. And the breaking of the seventh seal means that that scroll is fully opened, and the remainder of the end of the world is seen there on that scroll in John's eyes. And so that's what John is going to unfold for us in chapter 8 down through the end of the book of Revelation, the end of all things, as he peers there at the entirety of the scroll. Though he's not allowed to tell us everything that he sees, he's told to shut these things up and not to talk about them anymore. And as we get to this point of talking about this seventh seal and these first two trumpets that are blown by these angels, begin with a very easy way for us to understand some things. Understand the thrust of this passage, I think. As a father, as a husband, I am almost always, unless I'm just completely exhausted and I accidentally fall asleep, I am almost always the last one in my home to fall asleep. I do like staying up late for whatever reason. I've always studied late into the night, but I stay up late not because I enjoy it. I stay up later than the rest because there's something gnawing at me, and it's the responsibility of caring for my family. And every night it passes through my mind as I'm laying there in bed and everybody else is asleep, what would I do if someone were to try to break through a window? What would I do if someone came to the front door and barged in with a gun and was going to harm my family? And I run through in my mind all of these scenarios. Man, you can put yourself in that position, can't you? You've thought the same exact things. Ladies, you've probably thought the same exact things. What would you do if someone barged into your child's room, your young, helpless child, barges into their room and means to do them harm so as to make themselves richer by robbing you? So you run through these scenarios, and as I thought of that and as I thought of this passage, it dawned on me. That's it. As I think about my boys' room, they sleep in twin beds. There's a window right in between it. I imagine there being someone with ill intent walking up to that window and busting through that window while I'm fast asleep. I've already fallen asleep. And he bursts through the window. And my boys, young as they may be, they have a choice in that moment. They have a choice whether or not to trust in their own ability to defend themselves or to call on Daddy, who can finish the job. They have a choice. They could try to run, sure, and pick up a book and throw it at a robber. Seems hardly that that would work. They could go try and find a baseball or a baseball bat. Maybe the genes have passed down, and maybe they're able to defend themselves. I don't know. But the question is, when that moment comes, who will they trust in? Where is their faith put? And I imagine my boys having faith in me as the window is burst through. The first word out of their mouth is, "Daddy, come save me. Daddy, come help me." They're in distress. They're crying. They are about to suffer. And they call on my name, and I barge through that door, and I spare no expense, and I take care of the problem, and I subdue the target, and I make sure that my children are safe and taken care of. And you know why they're safe and why they're taken care of? Because their father heard their cry for help. And he was prepared to exact righteous judgment in that moment. But in that day, where will their trust be? That's the question. In that day, where will their trust be? Because God hears the cries of his people. He will respond and exact righteous judgment. But the question comes in this way. When that day comes, where will your trust be found? Let's look at our text together. Chapter 8, verse 1 says, "When the Lamb opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour." Notice here at the beginning of 8 that it is the Lamb once again who is opening the seals. A reminder to us on every page of the book of Revelation, on every single page, that Jesus is sovereign over all of the things that unfold. God holds all of these things in his hand, and he is executing his plan to perfection. And so it says, "The Lamb opened the seventh seal," and that scroll is fully opened all the way to the end of all things, the consummation of all things, as it were. And it says here that there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. Silence because of what is written there on the scroll. And as you see these pages unfold, these verses unfold, you will see that what's written on that scroll is that there are about to be seven trumpets that are blast. And at the blast of each one of these trumpets, the judgment of God is going to be poured out on the earth. Notice there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. That at the viewing of the judgments of God, even heaven holds its tongue. The judgments of God are so incredible, they are so terrible, they are so perfect to the end that even heaven holds its tongue when they see what is about to take place. Man not ought to be haughty, ought not be arrogant before God, thinking he'll escape the judgment of God or thinking that he can endure the judgment of God. Even heaven holds its tongue when they see the things that are going to take place. So there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. And as you've seen at this point, there is almost never silence in heaven. There's always singing. There's always dancing and the playing of music and the shouting and the casting of crowns there at the feet of God Almighty. There's always worship going on, but at the sight of the judgments of God, heaven holds its tongue. Look at verse 2. Rather, before we do that, think on this. Before we began our study, when you thought about the book of Revelation, one of the first things that everybody thinks about when they consider the book of Revelation is the Antichrist. Who is the Antichrist? Who is he? Where does he come from? What does he do? We know we ought to be trembling before this being. We ought to be fearful before this being. And everyone is overly consumed with who is the Antichrist. Notice 8 chapters in, he hasn't even been mentioned. 8 chapters in, and he has not even been mentioned. And yet there is great terror, terror such that even heaven holds its tongue. The person to be feared in the book of Revelation, the being to be feared in all of the Bible, is not the devil. It's not the Antichrist. The being to whom which we owe fear is God. It's God alone. So when we look at the unfolding of Revelation, we ask ourselves, where is my trust? If my trust is in God, my fear is in God, then whom shall I fear? But if my trust is not in God, then I ought to fear God. So verse 2 says, then I saw the 7 angels who stand before God, and 7 trumpets were given. These are not their own trumpets. They are given these for a task. They are obedient servants. May we be the same thing. And 7 trumpets were given them. Verse 3 says, and another angel came and stood at the altar with a golden censer. And he was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints on the golden altar before the throne. Now, just a little bit of background here before we proceed any further. A censer, what that would have been, it would have been a bowl. It would have been some sort of dish. This is a golden bowl, and it would have had a pole on the end of it to where it could be dipped into the fire. It could be dipped into the coals, and coals could be scooped up without burning the hands of the one who is using that censer. You remember in the Old Testament, in Exodus chapter 30, when God is giving the plan of the tabernacle, of the house of the Lord, there to Moses, there on Mount Sinai, and he gives him the plan for the tabernacle, the construction of the temple that would be in the wilderness, a model of what Solomon was to build there when he came into the kingdom. And these are replicas of the things that Moses saw there in heaven, as the book of Hebrews tells us. But in Exodus chapter 30, you see that there is a central place there in the tabernacle, in the church, in the place of worship in the Old Testament. And that central place, the center place that was the most difficult to get to, that you do not go, even the priest of God only goes once a year, and that is to make atonement for sins. That is the Holy of Holies, where the Ark of the Covenant rests, where the tablets were, and the staff of Aaron who budded. And the manna is kept there in the Ark of the Covenant. And the presence of God dwells there between the two cherubim on top of the ark. Right outside of that tent, there was an altar, a golden altar built. And on that altar, incense was to be offered. The priest was to take that censer, that golden bowl. He was to scoop up some fire, some coals, and then he was to take it and he was to pour it out on the altar, and he was to sprinkle that fragrance, that incense upon it. And that incense would be burnt, and it would rise up there before the presence of God as a pleasing, sweet-smelling aroma, ever in the presence of God to please him. The priest, that was his duty to do every single day. In Matthew chapter 27, and we will approach this text quickly here in the Gospel of Luke on Sundays, you remember that as Jesus was crucified, he cried out with a loud voice and he surrendered his spirit up to God. You remember what took place when Jesus cried out and surrendered his spirit to God? It says that the earth shook and the rocks split open there in Matthew 27:51. But more than that happened. There was an earthquake, yes. The rocks split in two. But the Bible tells us that the temple veil was torn in two. That replica of what God had made there in the wilderness through the hands of Moses, now there in Jerusalem, that temple veil is torn in two. Why? Because Jesus satisfies all of the law on our behalf. There no longer needs to be a sacrifice made in order to enter into the holiest places in the presence of God. Now you and I have access to God. Now you and I, our prayers go unhindered before God because that veil is torn, because Jesus, our great high priest, has offered himself as the perfect sacrifice. Now you and I, you have the privilege, I have the privilege to do what we did a second ago, to bow our head, to pray to God, and he hears our prayers because that temple veil was torn in two. Jesus fulfills that entirety of the Old Testament sacrificial system, and so now you and I are able to call out to the Lord. So look, with those things in mind, with that reality in mind, that your prayers go unhindered to God because of the sacrifice of Jesus, your prayers ever go up before the Lord. Look at verse 3 and 4 in its entirety. And another angel came and stood at the altar with a golden censer, just like that priest. The priest was modeling what the angel does. And he was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints. Ah, you notice that ingredient he throws in? He's not just offering incense as a sweet-smelling aroma to the Lord. He's also throwing in the prayers of the saints, the cries that you just made to God. The angel there in heaven mixes that in with the fire, and he pours it out before God. Your prayers that you just prayed rose up into the ears of God. With the prayers of all the saints on the golden altar before the throne, now the Holy of Holies, where God himself sits, not just his presence. And the smoke, verse 4, and the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints rose before God from the hand of the angel. What a beautiful picture. What a beautiful reality. That your prayers don't go unheard. Your prayers are heard. Your deepest difficulties, your struggles, your hurts, when you have been betrayed, when you have been mistreated, and you call out to the Lord hears those prayers. They are poured out before him, and they come up as smoke in his nostrils. He is very aware of your struggles. He's very aware of how you've been mistreated, how you've been abused, the difficulties that you have. They are ever present before the presence of God Almighty, the one who made you. Now, what does God do with that? That's the question for us, isn't it? What does God do with my prayers? I know he hears my prayers, but what does he do with them? What is his reaction to them? Because sometimes I pray and I feel like maybe God isn't listening. Well, I know that's not true, but sometimes I pray and I feel like God's not reacting. When is God going to react to my deepest difficulties, to my hurts, to my betrayals? When is he going to act on these things? When is God going to right every single wrong? Look at this in verse 5. Then the angel took the censer and filled it with fire from the altar and threw it on the earth. There were peals of thunder and rumblings, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. The time has come here in John's vision for God to take vengeance on behalf of his people. He has heard their cries for help. He has heard their cries of all the difficulties that they've had, and he is going to take their prayers and he is going to turn them back on the heads of those who are unrighteous on the earth. That is what God will do with prayers. He will answer every single one of them. Verse 6 says, now the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared to blow them. Now these trumpets, as you look at the Bible, at the entirety of the Bible, at the day of the Lord that is pictured here, this mighty day of wrath and vengeance where God is taking his vengeance on behalf of his people and on behalf of his law, that mighty day is characterized by the blowing of trumpets. These trumpets are not just signaling destruction. These trumpets are battle cries. We've all watched the old movies where the battle lines are drawn and the armies are held back. But then that trumpet blasts, and what happens? Everyone charges because it's on, right? Look at what happens. Verse 6 says that the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared to blow them. Battle is about to ensue, and it's a very lopsided battle, isn't it? It's a one-sided battle. It's God waging war against sin and against the unrighteousness of the world. Verse 7 says, the first angel blew his trumpet, and there followed hail and fire mixed with blood, and these were thrown upon the earth. Zephaniah chapter 1, verse 14 through 17 talks about this great and wonderful day, this terrible day of the judgment of God, and says, a day of trumpet blasts and battle cry against the fortified cities and against the lofty battlements. God says, I will bring distress on mankind so that they will walk like the blind. Because they have sinned against the Lord, their blood shall be poured out like dust and their flesh like dung. This is God taking his vengeance upon the sin of the world. So the first angel blew his trumpet, verse 7, and there followed hail and fire mixed with blood. And these were thrown upon the earth, and a third of the earth was burned up. And a third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. As God hears the cries of his people, he begins to respond now. He begins to respond now by righting every single wrong. And I've told you this before, that as you read the book of Revelation, I hope that you see the parallelism between this book and between the events that took place there in the book of Exodus, when God rescued his people there out of Egypt. And I hope to show you some of that parallel here tonight. Remember, as God hears the prayers of these saints in Revelation, he responds in judgment. He responds with these great judgments at the trumpet blast. Exodus chapter 3, verse 7, as Moses is standing there, rather he is kneeling shoeless before the burning bush, and the Lord communicates to him. This is what God says, Exodus 3, 7. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings. And you remember God's response to hearing the cry, to hearing their weeping and their mourning because of the heavy load that they are bearing. God begins to pour out judgments on all of Egypt. 10 plagues, in fact, they escalate upon one another. The 7th plague that God instituted there against the Egyptians was the plague of hail. And as hail fell there on the land of Egypt, it killed both man and beast. It destroyed crops. It destroyed the food that the people were to eat. Now look at what God does here in verse 7. First angel blew his trumpet, and there was hail and fire mixed with blood. This is going to cause great death. And these were thrown upon the earth. A third of the earth was burned up. A third of the trees were burned up. And all of the green grass was burned up. I want you to see the fulfillment of God's promise here from the book of Psalms. Psalms 18, 6 through 7. I'm going to read this for you. In my distress, I called to the Lord. To my God, I cried for help. From his temple, he heard my voice. The same picture we see here, right? From his temple, he heard my voice, and my cry to him reached his ears. Then the earth reeled and rocked, and the foundations also of the mountains trembled and quaked because he was angry. Verse 8 says, smoke went up from his nostrils, and devouring fire came from his mouth. Glowing coals flamed forth from him. That's not just flowery language that the psalmist is putting on paper. That is a promise from God that he will hear the cries of his people. He will hear of their distress. Those prayers that you said just a moment ago, the prayers of our brothers in the Middle East who are dying, who are suffering daily, being run away from their homes, as they cry out to the Lord, he will hear them in his temple in their distress, and he will respond, as this text says in Revelation 8, 7, with fire from heaven mixed with hail, and it's going to cause great bloodshed such that a third of the earth is burned and a third of the trees and all of the grass. Look at verse 8, another plague poured out upon mankind, not just on the land of Egypt, now on the whole entirety of the world. The second angel blew his trumpet, that battle cry once more, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. A third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Exodus chapter 7 tells us that this was the first plague that God instituted against the people of Egypt. But now it has come in full. Now, rather than just the waters of Egypt turning into blood, now it is the seas. Now it is the oceans turning into blood. And it is not without effect. In fact, it says this, that a third of the living creatures of the sea died. You almost see an undoing of Genesis, don't you? You see an undoing of these days of creation. You see creation unraveling at the hand of God. God is enacting vengeance against the world, and whereas in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, now he is pouring out judgment on the heavens and the earth. And whereas God once put all of the living creatures there in the ocean such that Genesis says that it teemed with life, now he's pouring out judgment, and the life that teemed in the oceans is going to die, a third of it, at this point when he throws this great object, something like a mountain burning with fire, and he throws it into the ocean and turns it all into blood, a third of it. A third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. That's something interesting to say. A third of the ships were destroyed. We have to look elsewhere in the Bible and get a picture of the way the Bible talks about this great day of the Lord to understand exactly what God means here. And I think when we do, it ought to open our eyes to something. In Isaiah chapter 2, verse 11 through 16, God talks about this great day of judgment through the prophet Isaiah. He says this: "The haughty looks of man shall be brought low, and the lofty pride of men shall be humbled. And the Lord alone will be exalted in that day. For the Lord of hosts has a day against all that is proud and lofty, against all that is lifted up, and it shall be brought low. Against all the cedars of Lebanon, where they look for their strength, lofty and lifted up, and against all the oaks of Bashan, the strongest of the woods there, against all of the lofty mountains where you would go for a stronghold normally, and against all the uplifted hills, against every high tower and against every fortified wall, against all the ships of Tarshish, and against all the beautiful craft." All of the things that mankind would put their faith in, put their trust in for commerce, for power, for strength, even the seas of the ship, they will be destroyed when this great object is thrown into the ocean. One of the things that you should notice that's very different here from the seals that are broken there in chapter 6 is that when the seals in chapter 6 are broken, those could almost be explained as earthly events, couldn't they? Because you have war that breaks out, you have conquering kingdoms, people could think up those things, people could do those things, you have great massive amounts of death, no one needs to be creative to see that those things have happened in this world. You have pestilence, you have famine, we see that every single day. But what you see from these trumpet blasts are distinctly heavenly. These trumpet blasts are distinctly from God. They are distinctly from heaven. And God's act of judgment is to shatter the very things that man would take pride in, the very things that man would take comfort in. Whereas man at one point would have thought he was the master of the sea, God shows them with the dropping of this one object. He turns the sea into blood and destroys all of the ships. What are the things that you place your trust in? When this day comes, what are the things that you'll place your trust in? You remember what I said to you there at the beginning. As that man of ill intent comes to break through the window of my boy's room, in that day of judgment, where will their trust be? Will they look to themselves? Will they look to the things that they would take pride in? Or will they call to their Father? Because God hears the cries of his people, he will respond in righteous judgment. So on that day, where will your trust be? Only those who trust in the Lord endure that day. Will you pray with me?